Welcome back to another great episode of Comedians in Bed, where comedians can come be comedians. And I don't really know what that means, but it just sounds like something that you should say on a podcast. Man, our next guest is very funny, very talented. I had an opportunity to be on the show with him. He was very warm, very welcoming. It's something that I don't usually get when I'm out on the, well, I usually get it when I'm out on the road. When I'm here, I guess people know me. So it's like, you know, by and by or whatever. But he was very engaging, very, very intriguing. And for me, it was unusual because we was in enemy territory. You know, this is from the state up north. So now we have someone from up north, you know, talking to someone. I don't even know if they call us the team down south. I don't know what they call us. I don't even know if he's a fan of the team up north. But if he is, we're coming together today and we're going to unite and we're going to talk about some comedy. And we're only going to do that with the wonderful and the very talented Louis Michael. Please, everybody.
Hey. Louis Michael. Oh, my goodness. That was such a kind intro. Thank you. That's, wow, man. I'm a little sad because I'm like, man, are you really just interacting with shitbags all the time? But no, thank you. I guess first and foremost, I went to Michigan State, so I'm kind of the stepchild of the rivalry. Yeah, there it is. However, I don't know. Michigan, it's been so rough up here that I you know, U of M's win and now the Lions doing well. I'm like, it's just thumbs up all around. Yeah. Just in the year of our Lord 2024, I'm just happy to see people smiling about anything.
But you guys got a nice you guys picked up a good coach though. I think you guys are going to be a problem in the next like 4 years, maybe so.
I mean, speaking strictly for football, because we've been a problem menace off the field, Michigan State. But yeah, man, I'm looking forward to it. I graduated in 2014, so that was like the dynasty era of Michigan State, where we won the Rose Bowl and just it was all good time. So I got spoiled there. But no, man, I, you know, rivalry aside, I think in comedy, man, when you start working the road enough, I'm just happy to see somebody who's not a son of a bitch, you know. The baseline when I'm on the road is like, "Yeah, please just don't be an asshole." And if that expectation's met, I'm already like, "Cool, I can be very good buddies with this person."
Yeah, I try to like, I mean, I do this here too, but I kind of like stay back and just watch how people like how this is done here. You know what I'm saying? And then, but I mean, everybody. Like talked and I talked to everybody, but you were like, "Hey, what's up?" And then I thought the conversation was over, and then you came back and kept the conversation.
Man, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. I was like, I need to be more like that because I'm usually like pretty like standoffish. But that night, actually, I was like, "All right, tonight I'm gonna go in here. I'm not gonna have my AirPods on. I'm just gonna like talk to everybody, be engaging, be present."
And what show? So it was a good time. You're gonna have to remind me what show specifically. 313 show. Oh, okay. Yeah, man. Yeah. All right. So here's my whole thing about 313. Because yes, now I remember specifically that show. That show, I love the producers. I love Detroit. I love going down there. And I've had fun on that show before. But it's just kind of a difficult room to do stand-up. It seems like it should be awesome. So I always, whenever I'm there, I just try to put out good vibes. Because I'm like, this could be kind of a mediocre or bummer of a time for us on stage. So I'm like, let's just have fun off stage. Yeah, and yeah, man, it's okay. I definitely remember that one because I believe I ate my own cock on stage. I did not do super well, but I thought you handled it like a champ. And then I think by the time I got on there, I was sweating so much because the room was so warm at that point.
It was so hot. That's why I appreciate you saying I did good, but I'm sitting there. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to move. I wasn't expecting it to be like, I don't know. Like, of course you got people in a small space. It's going to get hot, but I was just like, dang, bro. This is worse than light heat hot.
Yeah, you know, no, like, well, because you kind of get both. They have the one spotlight, you know, that's kind of hot, and then there's no airflow because we're in a Connex box with all the windows closed. And part of me is like, I know this isn't as bad as being human trafficked, but we're getting the Disney World experience. So.
What's the weirdest place that you've done comedy at?
Oh man. So there used to be weird in a good way. There used to be a show at a recycling center in Detroit called Chucky Finster that a couple of those producers at 3&3 put on. That was kind of wild because you just show up to what looks like an extras location for a RoboCop movie. And you're like, oh, are you going to fucking die? And yeah. Turn a couple corners, you're in a warehouse. And then I was supposed to go to Indianapolis tomorrow to do a show at a swingers club. And I thought that was like the name of a venue, but no, these people like legit are there for comedy and then they fuck literally around after. And so unfortunately I'm getting rebooked on that. Unfortunately, I don't know. The show's being moved, but I think if you would have asked me like next week, I'd be like, definitely the swingers club. How long have you been doing comedy?
4 years.
4 years. Okay. Oh. Yeah. So I think I'm coming up on like 9 or 10. I started in 2015. And yeah, over the years, especially when you're hungry, those first 5, 6 years, I was doing comedy in some weird fucking places, you know, like guerrilla pop-up shows. You're just so hungry for stage time that if there's a microphone and anybody that's willing to give you a listen, I'm like, ah, dude, Subway show. We did a Subway show in New York, which was, I did that once. I was like, never again. Like, you know, as of right now, I would say recycling center, and then just one nighters across the country where it's a brewery, but you're like, this should not be doing comedy right now.
I feel like the weirdest place for me was, it was an open mic, but it was a place that I know for sure used to be a strip club, and the pole was still there. And I'm like, dang, gonna keep this here. And I just gotta tell jokes with the pole behind me. And I'm like, I know a lot of stuff happened in this room.
Crazy. I was strip clubs and burlesque show stages. It seems like any kind of smut adjacent stage at some point will have a comedy show, because I don't know what it is about stand-up comedy kind of being like the cockroach of the entertainment world, where it's very robust and like hard to kill, and it'll show up anywhere. And it can be classy, you know, cockroach in a 5-star restaurant or around a dumpster. It's like, it will be anywhere. And get the fuck out. I say that with love and respect, man. I wish I had the talent of Doug Stanhope right now, but I think I have the love of stand-up comedy. Yeah. Like Doug. Yeah, I think so. I've been saying a lot that I think, this is the year and the end of last year. I'm like, I think I have both feet in the grave doing comedy. It's ankle deep, so I could pull out and still maybe do something else. But I'm like, nah, I think I'm going to die trying. Like, man, I hope I make it. Like we were saying, whatever make it is to the individual doing this. But it, like, I have some goals that I'm like, all right, if I can hit that, that's a happy life doing what I want to do. So we'll see.
Yeah. Sorry for my crappy Wi-Fi. There's a bad storm right now, but
you're good, man.
What
keeps blizzarding?
Yeah, it's about to be a storm.
God damn.
What keeps you going? You know what I'm saying? Like, some days I'll be thinking about that. I'll be like, man, I could really be at the crib right now. Like when I'm like, not when I'm there, but like when I'm like, when I'm with friends, I'm like, dang, I really be at this bar, and I could really just be at home. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what keeps you going?
Yeah. Man, that hits, because you've kind of caught me in an existential crisis moment for doing stand up. And when I was younger, you know, when you're really hungry, it's just about trying to get good at something. And I failed into doing stand up, because not my first choice. I loved it. I always loved it. But, I would say, everybody in stand-up that wants to make it, again, whatever make it is for them, has a little bit of delusion, or a lot of bit of delusion. So I would say, like, I don't know, man, the Black Matter's just a little bit of delusion of like the names and lights and the showgirls mentality of like, you're gonna be a star. But The other thing is like the pursuit of like being good at, and this is like in the macro world, I understand stand up doesn't matter, but it's what I'm doing with my life right now. So it matters a lot to me. So it's like the idea of being really good at something, like an art form or a way that I can express myself, and then other people like it, dig it, understand it, it helps them. That keeps me going as well. And just like, because a lot of things in life I've been pretty okay to good at. And stand up right now is one of those things where I'm like, I feel pretty okay to good, but I'm like, oh, I've had glimpses of like where I feel like I could be really good to great. And, you know, I think for all of us, we want to fulfill something in our lives that feels like greatness. And then I guess the idea of like, no matter what, we're all going to have to work some kind of job, and stand-up comedy is awesome when you're at a level where you're making livable wages. It's if I had to pick a job where I'm like, oh, okay, like, cause you know, you felt it nights away from home and, you know, 1,000 miles away from people who love you. And I think the stand-ups, you know, not facade, but, I don't know, the woe is me thing, or maybe it's lost on us, is we think we're the only ones doing it. But then I look at the long haul trucker, you know, right next to me, and we're on the road. I'm like, oh, that guy's doing the same fucking away from home job. You know, there's guys in the military that are on month long deployments. So like stuff like that puts it in perspective for me, where I'm like, oh, okay, like this job might suck and you're away from home and those loved ones, but I'm like, at least if the job itself still kind of rules, like that also makes it a little bit worth it. So I don't know, I guess being a little bit delusional, being a dreamer, the pursuit of something that I could maybe be great at someday are the three main motivation factors. And then like the context of it being a job that could be the most fun thing ever also kind of fucking rules. Cause if you had those imposter syndrome moments where like you get a paycheck from like a really good gig and you had a great time and you're like, ooh, fuck. Like, I don't feel, you know, you almost get like a duper's delight smile where you're like, ah, I fucking tricked them all. I tricked them all and I get paid. And
I've never gotten paid that much to have that. Have imposter syndrome yet? Usually, like if I get it, like maybe I forgot how much they was gonna pay me, or they just pay me more than expected. I'd be like, oh, look,
yeah. Okay. I guess you know what? In the grand scheme, like the superstars in comedy are making insane amounts of money. I'm just talking like, you know, and I've gotten a paycheck for a few $100 before on a weekend where I'm like, fucking idiots, man. Like, yeah. Or a drunk guy will tip you like $100 or something. That's only happened one time. But I remember I almost was going to like give it back. And the headliner was like, no, to fucking take that money.
I think the most I ever made was when I did like a Don't Tell weekend for like, okay, like 120 or something. And I was like, wait, you guys are going to pay me for every show? So I'm getting paid twice tonight. Yep. Like, so yep. But it was just like, I'd just be more so shocked. Like I'm even getting paid to do something that I do for free, that I would
right.
do for free.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like that's why I'd be thinking of it as when you were talking about being delusional. If you watched that Cat Williams interview in there, he did talk about to be confident and not delusional is a real skill, you know. Yeah. And I kind of think about that more now, because like as comedians, I think we can be sometimes delusional.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes, oh, yeah. So when you say imposter syndrome, I kind of think of it the other way around. I'll be hearing people like, they'll be like ripping people off, in my opinion, and being like, hey, I'm a headliner. If you want to book me, like $200 or whatever. But if you went to the show, it's like it wasn't $200 worth of jokes. You know what I'm saying? And you could tell it's a rip, but they're not going to say nothing because they're younger. So I look at it that way. Like, dang, am I worth what they're like? And maybe it's the same, but like, I was like,
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, like, am I worth like this rate I'm telling people? So I don't even tell people like my rate. Like, if anything, I'll be like $50. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's just to get some weed. But like,
right, right.
You know.
Well,
so,
no,
like,
I, yeah. At some point, you do have to, the business side of show business, you do have to start to understand your value as an entertainer. And that's kind of like, I'm in the midst of that right now where I'm like, it just kind of feels gross and it's hard. Like you were saying, and that's where I think the like duper's delight comes in is like, I would do this for free. I love doing it, you know, and I go to open mics to do new stuff because I have to. And I do that for free because it's part of the process for me. And so, yeah, like figuring out your own value and worth is really tough. And to like not be delusional about where your value is right now. And I've noticed that with some newer people who, you know, ego obviously is a huge thing. Narcissistic tendencies are something else you got to keep an eye out for. I know I did watch that Cat Williams interview and I thought a lot of good poignant points came out there. And man, I'm blanking because you brought something up that really had me kind of fired up on the you know, knowing your value and your worth. When you're talking about people like hustling for positions on shows that maybe they're not ready for yet, or they're just wholly unqualified for. I personally, and I've enjoyed this part of the process, I'm a slow mover in like anything I do. You know, I'm an earthbender. You know, I lift heavy weights slowly. In jiu-jitsu, I move pretty slow and use pressure. In comedy, you know, I did open mics until somebody up the line was like, hey, come host this show. I was like, oh, okay, I guess I can host now. And then I would do that. And then, you know, the whole time you're having maybe an issue with confidence. But again, that the imposter syndrome is right here. And then like I rule egos right here and they go to war in my head all the time. But then you see those fucking people that they're like, oh, I'm a headliner. And you're like, no, you're not. No, the fuck you are not. And then you're going to burn this room down. You're going to lose the show, right? Like, yeah, you just see people. And I think for me, the most disgusting person the most disgusting people I interact with in comedy aren't like the shit bags who are also very hilarious, like just rude road dogs or rude, you know, famous headliners. They suck, but at least they're good at the job. It's the delusional types or the people who just want the accolades of being a comedian. And I'm like, oh, dude, that sucks. Like, it's gross. Like, if you want to do this just for the title, you're gonna probably fucking suck. Because it's not awesome or noble or really that big a deal. So like just wanting to do it for the, oh, I'm a stand-up, and then people are like, oh, tell me about that. I'm like, it's and this is weird. This was a younger dream of mine, one of the many things I aged out of or just didn't pursue. But I remember talking to a military recruiter, and there was a Navy recruiter talking about the Navy SEALs, and he said almost the exact thing about people in that community, where it's like, yeah, the people that just want to be Navy SEALs to say they're a Navy SEAL never make it. Maybe a couple who are fucking insane. You know, the ego warriors that's them. But it's like, no, the people who make it are the ones that want to do the job. And it's like, if you want to be a headliner or a really good fucking stand-up comedian or just a comedian in general, you got to want to do the job. Now, there's thousands of different ways for everybody to write and pursue and be funny on stage. I'm cool with whatever, you know, people do to be funny. I zero criticism on that. I'm like, be funny. But for the love of God, want to do the job. And for a long time, even where I'm at right now, a lot of the job kind of sucks ass. Being on stage is the best part. That's the best part. It has to be.
I think to me, that's what keeps, I mean, I'm only 4.
No, sorry. Yeah. I should be asking you back.
I was just picking back off what you said. I think what keeps me going is like knowing that there's people like that, and it's like, oh, all these people are just, they'll get out the way eventually.
You want to dunk on people that are in it for the wrong reasons? I'm here for that. If a little bit of spite, that can keep you going.
Sometimes, so this is like,
It's like, I know you're not going to be. In 10 years, we'll see who's really still here. And it's just like, it'll just weave its way. That's why when people get certain accolades, or when people get, I think I understand it more now. When people get certain accolades, when people get on certain shows with certain headliners or whatever, it's like, great for them. This is my journey. This is, I'm just focused on me. Yep. We don't even know if they're going to be here 10 years from now. We don't even know if I'm going to wake up tomorrow. So like, just have fun tonight, do your best, and just keep going. And then eventually we'll see who really put the work in, and we'll see. We'll see. Like,
you did. That's beautiful. You did a really good, you know, just really good macro. Like, stand up not mattering to the point where knowing you could die tomorrow is like, always keep that going. That's like, that's a truth for everybody, where like, it's so easy to forget that, because the mundane routine of life just kind of takes over for most of us. So it's like, it might seem cliche, but it's like, live every day like it's your last, because unfortunately you're going to get that phone call or that abrupt funeral post. You're like, oh, fuck, we're all going to die. And then... I do like how you were saying, like, you do hit a point where people, I don't know, you'll get an eye for it. I'm sure you're, but I'm like, I know sometimes they're gonna be like, this person's gonna quit. And it's not a bad thing, but I'm just like, they're not in it. And it's like, look to your left, look to your right. In 5 years, whoever's doing comedy with you right now probably won't be doing it in five more years. And it's sad. I'm coming up on 10 years, and it's like, that's two cycles for me where I'm like, the people I started with are almost completely gone, and the people I picked up with after that are almost completely gone. And now I'm looking around, I'm like, oh fuck, am I one of the old guys, like, still trying to do this professionally? Like, fuck. Because what scares the shit out of me is, you know, I hear stand-up comedian critics and a lot of like professional comics talk about people, for the most part, hitting their stride in their mid to late 30s and 40s. I'm like, dude, that's so much of a life to live on I hope, you know what I mean? That's my existential crisis, is my young youth is gone, and the remaining years of my youth are right the fuck in front of my eyeballs. And I'm like, dude, like, oh God, that's where I'm like, I got both feet in the grave. I'm like, I hope this fucking works, man. Like,
I kind of look at it. I get what you're saying. I kind of look at it differently, because I was like, I'm 33. So I was like, all right, like 10 years from now, I'll be 14 years in. Right. Yeah. So when I'm 43, I'll be 14 years in. And I was like, bro, that's going to be so dope. Because like, it gives me something to look forward to in my 40s. You know what I'm saying? Like, it gives me something to look forward to get up out the bed. You know what I'm saying? Like, our friends that don't, or people that don't know what they want to do with their life, or still trying to figure it out, they're gonna be at 40 like, what do I do? And it's like, I already know what I want to do, and I've got years in the game, and I'm doing it to the best of my ability. So when I look at it like from that way, it just gives me something really to look forward to. Like, when I think about like people, like, sometimes like, you see younger people and they'll have money, sometimes you never hear of them again, or they'll still be relevant. But if you really think of people that's really like doing big things, like, they're older, and I'd rather be doing something big, you know what I'm saying, than to be sitting at home dying. You know what I'm saying?
No,
like, you look at Denzel Washington, like Samuel L. Jackson, like, so it gives me something to look forward to like, okay, this, because sometimes I struggle, not like suicidal, but like what is my purpose? You know what I'm saying? Like, what am I here for? You know what I'm saying? So when I think of it like that, it gives me something to look forward to still, like, okay, I still want to be here at 60 killing it. You know what I'm saying?
Like, again, that's a beautiful take, and that's very optimistic, and I can get on board with that, because I think you kind of summarized exactly what I was thinking. Like, if this ends up well, like, or at least kind of good, the job in the future is going to rule so fucking hard, you know, and you hope for that back pay. And then it's funny that you brought up like purpose, because, you know, modern day philosophers that we are, I like reading a lot of philosophy and, you know, books on psychology. And I don't know if you know Viktor Frankl or Man's Search for Meaning, little pocketbook, a real sad read, survivor of the Holocaust. But he was a psychiatrist. Anyways, one of the things he brings up for like what gives your life purpose and meaning is your job or like what you do. And it's like one of the biggest things. And it's funny because, you know, it's the kind of metaphorical buddies we have in our 40s when we're in our 40s, you know, doing this and say they're doing whatever job puts food on the table that was kind of safe for them. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, that sucks. And I get why the regular midlife crisis happens and people have those existential crises in the middle of their lives or the perceived end of their lives because they didn't try to do anything that's fucking insane. I'll tell you this much, like, as scared as I am, I do always think like, oh, if I had to pull the trigger and get out of comedy, I could probably get a decent paying day job, you know, within a couple of weeks and work my way up to whatever livable wages in a few years. And that's like, I don't like thinking like that because it pulls you out of this stupid artist mentality and that gotta make it, you know, light a fire under your ass, burn the boats, we're not going home, we're going forward type of mentality. So I don't live there long. But I guess, yeah, the idea that in the future, the job I could be doing is a better version of what I'm doing right now. Yeah, it does keep me going, man. And I gotta tell you, I do love, you have a very positive outlook right now on stand-up. Man. That, no, it's beautiful. You caught me at a weirdly cynical time. And I'm feeling that like first real wave of like FOMO and potential bitterness, which has never been a personality trait of mine. Like, I'll tell you this much. There's comedians I don't really fuck with anymore because I just don't like them, but I don't go out of my way to say anything bad about them. But like, I'm feeling a little bit snarkier, if that makes it. I just got a little grit to me that's not really something I like, because personally, and something that does pull me out of it is the friends you make in comedy, the real ones, the real ones. And you know what I mean? The ones that like you really would be shocked if that knife was in your back from them. Yeah. Whenever they get like a legit win, there's this fire of happiness that explodes in me where I'm like, oh, thank God that's still there. I love that for a friend. And that to me also keeps me going, because it's like, oh man, when you see your buddies winning, one, it should just be a good feeling on its own. And then there's that also thing where you're like, all right, like that's my friend. We got to be doing something right. You know, like, and then something I always say, and we'll see if I ever get to use it. And it's a dumb, I'm pretty sappy, but I metaphorically, I'm always like, hey, pack a rope ladder. Cause if you ever get to the top, tie it off and throw it down. Cause do you really want to be up there alone? Like, that sucks. Mm-hmm. And if you want to be at the peak, you are going to be alone. But if you make base camp, I don't know, a couple hundred yards away from the top, still a pretty excellent fucking view, and you can have company. Like, okay. Do you like Shane Gillis or Louis C.K. or Dave Chappelle has even talked about it as well, where a lot of those guys talk about you go up and you touch the peak, but you don't want to stay there. And I think it was, might have been C.K. telling that to Gillis, and then it came up with Dave Chappelle. But I that's something I think is a pretty good take on it for success, where it's like, all right, everybody have your moment. And then instead of being pushed the fuck off or torn the fuck down, just gracefully make base camp somewhere near the top. You don't need to stay there, you know, like being near the top and having a pretty awesome view and also like good company, like for fuck's sake, man, I would never want to be without actual friends, you know, like trust, love, family, and real friends. Those things, I'm like, yeah, dude, like it's very cliche, but you really can't buy that shit. And you don't want to sell any of that off and never be able to get it back. So
I agree with you saying, like, where you were talking about, like, what I got from it was just like living just like just based on faith. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, none of this is in our control. You can only control what you can control. And I think for me, like, seeing my parents just kind of like be content and settle, it was like, bro, I cannot do that. Like, I just see how, like, it just like deteriorated their spirits a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, their faith is dwindled. They don't think anything could happen for them, you know, at some point earlier in their lives. And so it's like, I can't live like that. I'd rather chase my dreams. And if I have kids, bring them on the road with me. Like, this is how you be a parent and still have your own life.
Yeah.
Just living just, I think I don't get along with people who don't live life that way. Like, we're going to take a chance and we're going to see if it works. But if it don't, we're going to regroup and we're going to do it. And that's all I
do it again. Like,
all my life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I like people who just are willing to just let's see, you know. And I think when I first started comedy, my trust in people wasn't really the greatest. And still isn't, but I've been learning how to just really have boundaries and get to know people before I befriend them.
Were you that way before comedy? Like,
Before comedy, I was very trusting.
Oh, but shit.
Then,
okay.
Yeah. But then once I started doing and not because of comedy, just personal stuff, but once I started doing comedy, you know, my counselor likes to say that my life started to transition. You know what I'm saying?
Well, so, because the show business can be pretty cutthroat, right? And you get that shit where people want to take and they want to get to the top. They want that mountain peak.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, I have attributes and skill sets that, you know, I've been described as a golden retriever in a green room too many times. You know, just big smiles, kind of dumb, just happy to be there energy. But I'll say this much. I've met some snakes, some real reptiles in my day. And just be aware of that. Know that that can exist. But, like, for your own sanity, the royal we, our own sanity, it's like, man, I go around with a handshake and a smile towards, like, anybody in the business or in the green room. And I give everybody, like you were saying earlier, man, like, when we met, I'm like, yeah, it's just a happier way to live.
Yeah.
And then if somebody gives you reason to pull back, you know, giving somebody a warm handshake, a smile, and a chance, that doesn't cost you that much if you got to pull that back. You know, if you get stabbed in the back because you really give a piece of shit a lot of yourself or opportunities, that stings. But, you know, those interactions and at festivals, new shows, being on the road, I'm like, the professional courtesy of kindness and warmth should be given to all of us. You know, that's what I try to bring when I'm on the road and even at home, because I'm like, yeah, a lot of this sucks. You know, a lot of people are already against us. So it's like, I'm sure I've been and will be somebody's son of a bitch and villain. I'm sure. I wholeheartedly try not to be. But I understand in somebody's story, I'll be the bad guy. But for the most part, I really just try to give everybody the warmth, the chance, and the appreciation they deserve. And then, man, at the end of the day, if you want to be competitive, you know, for whatever the showbiz climbing is, save it for the stage. You know, if you're going to metaphorically going to pull your dick out and want to measure it, fucking do it on stage doing the damn thing. And even then, you don't have to be an asshole after. I love seeing somebody crush and then just, you know, be like, yeah, that was easy. I'm like, you fucking scallywag.
Hey,
yeah.
I seen, I think it was called Quarterbacks on Netflix, and Patrick Mahomes, he was saying that he's nice to everybody that they're on the field with because, you know, they'll take it easier on you, you know, like they'll let up instead of like powering through you on the field if you're nicer to them. And I don't know why, but that kind of like stuck with me. So like, if I'm not really in a talkative mood, I'm still going to make sure I say hi to everybody, and I'm getting back to, you know, walking in the room with like a smile on my face and everything. And I'm learning how to, you know, interact with people, but not like let them in at the same time, you know, trying to figure it out and everything. And I really don't like, I like for real, like when comics like treat you a certain way, I just be like, oh, they're just projecting. Like, I don't know what they've been through
for sure
in their life. I don't know what they've been through in life to make them act this way or dress this way or, you know, whatever the case may be. Like, I just, you know, I just be like, I don't know their story, but hopefully from listening to them on stage, I can start to learn that. And if I'm interested, then I'll develop, you know, a more than hello, how are you type of relationship. Yeah. But I think people are just a little bit too critical, and it's just like, you don't even know this person or what they've been through.
That's interesting you bring that up, because it's like, first of all, I think comedy being part of any kind of show business or arts, just an island of misfit toys for the most part. You know, there's a couple of, I love meeting a totally normal person that does well in comedy where I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, all right, cool. Like, I think Pete Holmes has talked about that, where he's like, man, I don't know. A lot of comics are fucked up, sad, and weird. I just like doing comedy.
Bro, there's at least three comics here in this scene that I know for sure would kill somebody. I know.
Yeah. For the most part, stand-up comics are a group of real rapscallions. But something that you brought up is like, if somebody's being like standoffish or projecting shitty energy, I let it go. And then I kind of try to have a couple of default settings to, you know, save my own golden retriever ego, where I'm like, maybe motherfucker just had a bad day. Like, we've all had fucking bad days, and then you got to go do stand up. And it's like, oh, this is not what I want to do. You know,
that's
you
how just I think about it.
Yeah, you just have the worst day ever. And then you're like, oh, my job is to try and go make people project joy out of their throats. Like, nah, not today, motherfuckers.
Yeah, man, because I'll be like, I hope people don't take how I interact at a club personally, because usually if I'm an open mic, bro, my creative juices start going, so and my anxiety is going, so I'm not really paying attention. Like, I may walk in and not speak to nobody, and then 20 minutes later start saying hi to everybody. It's like, okay, I need to get here, I need to calm down, I need to settle. Write this out, calm down. You know what I'm saying? So,
well, that's just you, right?
Yeah.
Like, eventually, if you keep showing up, you know, everybody starts to kind of pick up on people's idiosyncrasies, right?
Yeah.
And it's part of what makes us individuals. So if you show up, people might be like, Tiny's like, you know, 20 minutes to do whatever he's got to do. And then he says hi and he's a good dude.
Yeah.
You know, and then I show up. Somebody shake my hand. Shake my hand or the devil will get us. Like, but it's, you know, it's those things that when you keep showing up and you have colleagues, peers, and friends in this, say, you know, you're having an off day or somebody doesn't know you and they immediately subscribe a personality trait to you that's not you, part of, you know, whatever actual use of clout could be is having somebody that does know you be like, oh no, he's cool, just give him a second, he's cool, he's normally not like that, you know, he's cool, he's just having an off. That's the type of shit that, like, now you're talking about character development and just having your character and reputation also kind of guard you when maybe you're not in the best state of mind or at your best, you know, socially or professionally.
You know, the first thing I ask when I, like, sometimes comics will say something to me now that I've been interacting with everyone now instead of just people I feel just comfortable with. So now that I've been like talking to people more, if they say something that kind of rubs me the wrong way, the first question I ask is, how old are you?
Okay.
I need to know how to respond to you, because if we like the same age, I know I can talk to you like a mature conversation.
Yeah.
If you're pretty young, I'm probably just going to be give you a quick, short answer, and you know, or whatever. Yeah. Or if you're like super young, I'm like, oh, he's just trying to be funny. Okay, don't take this.
Yeah.
Question. You know what I'm saying? So like that's the first question. How old are you?
Are you talking like green room talk where you're like, what the fuck are you, like, what are you saying type of shit? Yeah. Unfortunately, I think I know it too well, because as a younger comic, I was probably, it's never good to be the talkative dumbass, and I definitely think that was probably me. However, I will say, sometimes
mics or just at mics and people like trying to hold you accountable in a weird way, like, you don't have to hold me accountable, like, if I'm not here, I'm just not here.
Also, man, open mics, I think if you have been doing comedy for like 3 years or more and you consistently are at open mics, man, that's the fucking sausage factory of comedy. And it's like, dude, like if it's like you're at Uncle Fucker's on a Tuesday for the 52nd time that year, and somebody's like, hey, he's a little bit off. It's like, dude, fuck off, man. Like, like open mics are their own Mos Eisley cantina where it's like, eh, sometimes you're in a great mood, other times. And if the new guy's like, what is this guy's? Just fuck off with all that energy. But it's funny. I do want to say, normally, I think age is a pretty good indicator of somebody's maturity. But I've also noticed in comedy, sometimes not always. Because I meet people that do start late in life. Some are awesome. But then other times, I'll be witnessing like weird drama. That's the other thing is, if you're involved in any kind of drama at the open mic level, and I mean this sincerely, kill yourself. Right now, give up on your dreams and kill yourself. No, I'm sorry.
I do not.
No,
do drama in my life. Period. And then if you bring drama to me, I'll be like, you can stay over there.
I'm just fucking. Yeah, I know. It's just like it's the amount of energy wasted on like the ego at like the open mic level. It's like it's a soap opera, and I get that it's just life, and people they love that water cooler type of nonsense. But my point being is like I've met some people where at the show and, you know, doing their stage time, they get into these dramatic like arguments and it's very theater kid type of shit. And then like you'll see them out and about with their family and kids. And it's almost like seeing like a teacher when you're a kid, like out shopping. You're like, oh, fuck, you're like a regular person. And like, what the fuck? And so sometimes it's just weird because normally I would say age does equate to maturity in a lot of aspects. But sometimes I'm like, oh, fuck, like these people code switch on. Maybe not code switch, not switching their speech patterns, but you know what I mean? They like kind of are living two different lives. Yeah. One is very childish and again, the world of stand up. And then the other one is like, oh, they pay taxes. Yeah. they're dropping kids off at school. They're packing lunches. I'm like, wow, fucking wild, man. That's the other thing is, are you single? Are you seeing anybody? I'm not coming on here right now. I have a girlfriend. I have a beard. It's fine. Like I have a beard. No, but it's like I think
what?
I think for a lot of us in the midst of it, being like single or having like a girlfriend, when you're in the shit really figuring out comedy is okay. It's like, man, there's a couple of heroes that have started with full-blown families and have made it in whatever capacity it is for them, and I respect them so much, especially if they keep the marriage and kids alive and happy. But I'm like, yeah, man, this is when it becomes all-encompassing. It's not, I don't think it's healthy to do that to your family or loved ones after a certain point. And I have friends I love and respect in comedy right now who are pursuing it professionally and they're somehow also being good family members still. I'm like, mm-hmm. That you're a fucking superhero. Like in my mind, I'm like, that person's incredible to be a good dad, a good husband, and a good stand-up comedian. It almost feels like those triangles where it's like pick two, you don't get the third one. So the fact that I've met a few people doing that, I think is it's very impressive to me.
That's definitely a goal of mine. Yeah, do all three of that. I feel mm-hmm. like I know it can be done. Just
yeah,
you got to pick the right person and prioritize. Yeah. Really.
Yep.
And have
yep.
some money.
yeah, I was gonna say that my whole thing is yeah, having enough money to actually be able to live with a family. And that's why, like, for where I'm at in stand-up, like, sleeping in my car sometimes, road dog, and I'm like, yeah, this is not start a family style of life yet, you know? Because my day job is still gig working now to help pursue stand-up even more. But then again, like, I see there's a comic I really cherish from the east side of the country called Jimmy Cash, and he's a janitor, and he's... like that's his whole thing. It's kind of persona, but he's actually a janitor at a school. But he's also a professional stand-up comedian. And one of the most beautiful things I learned from him was like, yeah, taking care of his kids and family and making that a number one priority as well, while also being able to do stand-up. And he's like, it can be done. So that gives me hope as well, because as somebody who does want a family someday and to be a professional in comedy, I'm like, okay, cool. You got to look towards the examples of it can be done.
I think it gave me hope because I'm not an alcoholic.
You're
like,
not?
I really just thought about this like a couple months ago, because my dad's an alcoholic.
I
swore as a kid like I would never be in bars, and I was like, I'm in bars often, and I've never be like, oh yeah, I need to close my tab out. You know what I'm saying?
So do you drink or do you not drink at all? Or
I drink like if I like socially, like if we go out to eat or something like that. But I'm just like, if I can do this and not be alcoholic like I'm supposed to be, I can be a dad and a husband.
That's interesting that you bring that up, because again, stand up being what it is, drugs, alcohol, and sex being, you know, for a lot of people on the road, what they're about. I actually started stand up when I was like 25, around thereabouts, and from the age of like 19 to 25, I was definitely like a functioning alcoholic. And it was because like college and then a couple post college years, like just drinking and going out is what I was doing. And then when I started to drive to do open mics, to do stand-up comedy, I was like, well, I don't drink and drive, so I'm not going to drink. And I don't want to have to drink to do stand-up. That was the other thing, is I just was like, I can't be healthy to have to do stand-up drunk. So I was like, I got to learn to do it sober. So now that's my default, is like doing it sober. And, you know, driving a lot, so not drinking and driving. And so weirdly enough, I stand up kind of cleaned my life up in that regard, where I think if I would have had a more conventional life so far, I probably would have slipped into the deeper realms of like actual alcoholism. And yeah, man. So I don't know. To that regard, mad respect. Oh, oh yeah. No, but mad respect to you, like, you know, knowing that is something that, you know, might reside in you, or just something that you don't ever want to be part of your life. And then also, again, being in an environment where if you want to, super easy to drink and do whatever the fuck you want. And by the way, it's not even covering my own ass. It's like, I've tied one on, done drunk sets, partied doing stand-up. Like, there's a time and a place to be a real hog, and I've done it. And I also, this is me not passing judgment either, because I know tons of comics that, you know, function fine drinking. They're fucking hilarious. And I'm like, if you can do it, I don't give a shit. Again, that's me. Like my whole judgment for people's processes is like, as long as you're being funny and legitimately not hurting anybody, so maybe including yourself, so being an alcoholic, maybe not the best thing. But again, I'm just saying, like, I don't know, man, if there's comics that listen to this that drink and that's their thing, I'm like, I don't care, I'll have a beer with you. Fuck, I might get shit faced with you as well at some point, but you know, it's just kind of not my default setting. And again, kudos to you recognizing like that ain't the life you want to live.
Oh, heck, you know, man, I can't be like that dude. So what is like doing comedy like in Michigan? I had a good time. That was my first time, and I definitely going to come back soon. So like, what is comedy like in Michigan?
It's eclectic. I don't know, man. I live in East Lansing, or really close now, but I was asked by the university to talk at their stand-up comedy class, which was cool. But it like kind of fucked with me, because of like, you don't take a class to do comedy, just go do it. But there was a girl there. One of her jokes was, you know, she's from California, and she talked about how Michigan, and I'm gonna burn her joke, but whatever, race you to TV. She she referenced Michigan being like the cul-de-sac of America, where it's like, you know, you don't really, nobody really passes through here. You gotta like come up through here. And it's weird because in that way, it's very sheltered from the rest of the country. And I don't mean like, I don't know, we just don't get a lot of passer-throughs. So it's weird. We don't always get to see like a lot of road comics all the time. And for that reason, like a lot of comedy clubs closed down after the boom in the 90s. So like, for lack of a better term, like punk rock or like DIY alt comedy rooms really took over. When I first started, there was only like two comedy clubs in Michigan, maybe three. So what I love is there's been this grassroots comedy scene in Michigan where, you know, we just watched comedy and then we're like, fuck, I think if we find enough places that'll let us do this, we can just start doing this. And then you get that grassroots movement. And then we started going down into Ohio and Indiana. And I'm talking about my crew, the older Michigan comics. I'm sure they're road dogs. They have their own come up stories. But when it really clicked that Michigan comedy could hold its own is when some of us started to get into festivals or clubs around the country and do okay. You know, I'm not saying Michigan comedy is the best, but it was like, ah, we got some people that can really fucking hold their own with the best around the country. And that's fucking cool. So in that regard, I like it because it's like the whole state kind of feels like its own scene. Because you're out of Cleveland, right?
Columbus,
my bad. Mm-hmm. Columbus. Yes, OSU. You fuckers. So, but yeah, so like, Columbus, you probably know some of the Cincinnati guys and gals, and then maybe the rest of Ohio, but I imagine you stay probably in Columbus a lot, or do you go around to the other cities?
I'll go to other cities.
Okay.
Mainly Cincinnati, Dayton, and then once a year I go to LA, and then I try to go to Chicago a couple times a year.
Okay. But like weekly, are you going to the other Ohio cities a lot?
Not weekly, but probably like more monthly.
Okay. So, yeah. So especially being in like Lansing, Michigan, the center of the state, when you're like moving and grooving, you'll be in Grand Rapids, Lansing, Detroit, Ann Arbor, maybe Jackson, Saginaw, or Flint all within the week. And then you'll do it week after week after week after week. And so like in that regard, the whole state, like people in Detroit might not know everybody in Grand Rapids, but for the most part, we all know somebody who knows somebody, if not directly know each other. And I like that because any one city besides maybe Detroit, any one city isn't quite big enough to be its own scene on a national level. But together, collectively, is when you're like, oh, okay, cool. Like, you can hone your skills well enough to learn how to do this on a national level. Now, again, maybe not national touring headliner, but enough to be a transplant to one of the bigger cities. And you know how to fucking do stand up. You know, it's not like what is indoor plumbing. You're like, no, I know how to flush this toilet. Like, so I don't know. That's probably not a great explanation for the Michigan comedy scene. It teaches you how to flush.
I didn't think of it, you know, in that way. You guys are secluded, so I never thought of it.
I like it because the whole state is pretty collective. And I don't know. It's served a good purpose for me so far. And I think, I don't know, this is just a weird, you know, animalistic thing. I do want to move to pursue stand up at a higher level and really cut my teeth with some of the best, you know, that iron sharpens iron. But I mean, at some point I'm like, Michigan's not a bad place to live later on in life. You know, at some point you want to trade out adventure for comfort. And I'm like, yeah, this place can be comfortable enough. The blizzards suck ass, as you're about to have your years down there. And the winters are kind of rough, but you know,
speaking of Blizzard, man, you are the host of the Warm Up Podcast. You have a very different concept for your podcast. I really do love it. Really love to see how you put all of it together. You're basically in a car talking to another comedian, or you may be talking to yourself. And yeah, I really like it. I'm going to take it as your safe driver. Yeah. Not one that is too slow, you know, because some people be slow when they be talking.
Yeah.
So, like, how did you come up with this podcast, and what are some of the things that you talk about on?
So yeah, the warm up is once a week. I go to the gym a good amount in my life. I'm a gym rat. So once a week, I just take a little GoPro, stick it in my car dash, and then I've got a wireless mic. And it's just a 15 to 20 minute rant, maybe sometimes 10, depending on traffic to the gym. Where I just kind of rant about premises or, you know, or if another comedian's in town, we'll drive there and to talk about their fitness journey if they have one. But it really is just kind of an easy to do while still being somewhat unique podcast. And I got the idea because, like, yeah, everybody's seen comedians in cars getting coffee and, there's tons of one-off podcasts on the road or even TV shows. But I remember listening, I had just moved into my apartment alone. I used to have a bunch of roommates. We were all comedians. This equipment is from when we would all live together and do podcasts. And I was listening to, I think it was Shane Gillis and Matt McCusker. And they might've been on Rogan or something. And I was trying to figure out a concept to do a podcast alone. And I already write in my car all the time for stand-up. I'll just be sitting there like thinking crazy shit and muttering. It's like the car and the shower are the two places where I don't feel insane talking out loud to myself. And so they were talking about how, you know, right around the time I had the idea to do that, they were like, yeah, it's, if somebody was doing that, I'd be shocked. And I was like, oh, I think I can do that. And then immediately was like, oh shit, okay. And you know, it's fun because it's like sometimes I talk about fitness stuff. If I ever get genuine questions about fitness, I'll answer it and then go back into whatever I'm rambling about. I'll rate pre-workouts because I drink my pre-workout on the way to the gym. So that's been a fun thing with viewers where they'll recommend a pre-workout and I'll chug it and let people know. In the description on the YouTube, because I only post it on YouTube right now, I think I put in there, and I mean this like half sincere, half irony. I was just looking for like the easiest low rent concept to put out some fun content that wasn't like draining on me or taking away from other creative aspects. And I was like, ah, shit, camera in a car, 15 minutes. Pretty easy, entertaining enough. I think it's a good, you know, if you watch a couple of them, I'm like, yeah, that's my style. Like, if you dig that kind of humor, you'll probably like my stand-up. But yeah, man, I appreciate you plugging the warm-up podcast on YouTube under Lewis T. Michael. And yeah, it's just kind of a fun, it really does ebb and flow between super serious and super humorous depending on the day, you know, like, yeah. I don't really, I'll have bullet points to talk about, but I'm like, I don't know. I think Bill Burr's Monday Morning Podcast might be like one of the only solo podcasts I know of that's like funny and, you know, done well. And I was like, I'm nowhere near that level, but I was like, that's the only way I could think of doing a solo podcast. So
yeah. I understand. I get it.
I'm a rambler. Sorry.
I know you're fine. As we start to wrap this up here, who is on your Mount Rushmore for comedy?
Okay. Damn, dude, that one's always tough. Cause you only get four. All right. Probably Kyle Kinane, because he was the first comic I listened to where I sincerely was like, oh, maybe I could do that. Maybe I could do stand up. And for me, that's a beautiful thing. Like, he inspired me for a long time. I really emulated his style. And I don't know. He's, to me, he's kind of like one of the godfathers of the Chicago alt comedy scene. So yeah, for that, I got my guy, Kyle Kinane. I don't give a fuck what people say. Chappelle is he's incredible. Like, I don't know how many fucking specials he's put out now, but it's almost like this is a weird reference. He kind of reminds me of Weezer, but for stand up, where it's like some of the albums fucking rule, some of them were fine, but I'm like, God damn it, man, the ones that rule are incredible. And I'm still interested to see what Chappelle is going to do in the future. Are we doing living or just all time?
Whoever's shit. On there.
Okay, fuck. All right, so we got Canaan, Chappelle. Okay, I'm going to say, I don't care if he's in Vogue or not, but Gillis right now, Shane Gillis. Just because Canaan inspired me to start doing stand-up because I felt like I could do it like that. And Gillis has proven to me that stuff I want to joke about can be received well, and there's a market for it. Like, he has a lot of jokes about history and war that are funny and people like them. And I was like, oh fuck, like one of my only bits that's gone hyper viral is a World War II joke. And I was just like, oh shit. And this guy is doing it at a professional level that's inspiring to me. It's all guys, and I know I might come off as sexist, but yeah, damn it, it's my Rushmore. Last one, man. There's a lot of pressure. I'm gonna do some honorable mentions. Maria Bamford, Jackie Kearson, Jessica Kearson. So there's Jackie and Jessica. And then, man, I don't care if it's cliche or not, but probably Richard Pryor. A lot of people go George Carlin, and again, another honorable mention, but dude, Richard Pryor, just, I think he was as philosophically deep as intelligent as George Carlin, but he also just pulled off sillier better, and it like the poignant points Pryor would make, I think, came off funnier instead of ranty. And this is not like, I hate that it sounds like I'm criticizing George Carlin. It's just in comparison between Carlin and Pryor. And then the other thing is, man, like, I don't know. I'm sure you and your audience can tell by now, I'm not a black guy. You know, I haven't had to, like, you know, as far as a struggle goes, on the societal level, not that tough for me. And so, like, Pryor weaving through like 60s, 70s America, becoming a superstar, joking about poignant racial issues at the time, making it hilarious, palatable, probably to a predominantly white audience, you know, and then maybe using comedy in a way that I think a lot of us enjoy, which is to take something we love that may or may not be taboo and just bringing people in to see it from our perspective enough to at least laugh, if not, you know, try to understand more later. After you're done laughing, you go, well, what the fuck was he joking about though? And then you look into it. And Carlin and Pryor, I think, both did that at professional GOAT levels. But I don't know, man. Pryor just has that silliness factor that I love, you know, a little bit goofy. Yeah. So, all right, Canaan, Chappelle, Gillis, Pryor, and then, yeah, shit tons of honorable mentions. God damn it, with the Rushmore, I could do 10 Rushmores.
Any quick words of motivation for any comedian that is listening to this right now?
Oh, man. Motivation. It's something I wrote to myself today, and I write it on the walls of any club that I'm lucky enough to perform at. And again, it comes from a deep level of sincerity and sappiness, but it's like, I genuinely mean it. Have fun with it. And it's a cliche thing to say. It's almost as cliche as good set. But when you're on stage, if you are genuinely having a fun time doing your your art, your jokes, if you are having fun with it, I guarantee somebody in the crowd's going to fuck with that. It's very hard to look at somebody having a good time and scoff. So if you feel like you're in writer's block, or you know, things are clunky on stage, it's just not vibing, get back to a level where you're having fun doing your material. I don't know how you're going to get there, but you have done it at some point. Listen to your old sets. Listen to your past self having a good time and try and recapture that magic. Fall in love with it all over again. Keep trying, keep writing, be original, be funny for fuck's sake. Be fucking funny. If you can't be funny, be interesting. And if you can't be interesting, be informative. I got that from my uncle, who I'm sure got it from somebody else, but you know, yeah, the cliche thing is when you're down in the dumps doing stand-up comedy, that's not great for your stage presence. So try and have fun. And then my final thing is, if you're really trying to do stand-up professionally, you know, hey, I may not know you. You know, they're listening to this in post, but I am rooting for you, because, you know, it mostly is tough. And not a lot of people are going to be super kind to you along the way. So just know that this stranger, this goof drinking a seltzer, is in fact rooting for you. So that's my motivation. Go get them, team.
Lewis, tell people why they should listen to Comedians in Bed.
Man, because it's a space where you let your guests be themselves sincerely. And talk about something I think we love in common, which is stand-up comedy, in a serious light while having fun with it. So there you go, man. Also, you're just a goddamn kind host. you're just a really kind host. you got cool guy charisma. You've got quiet Riz, which is to capture that through an audio platform, incredible. That's why.
I appreciate it. Lewis, man, tell people where they can find you at.
I'm on, as of right now, just Instagram and YouTube at Lewis D. Michael. My real name, D is my middle initial. If I ever am on TikTok or Twitter or anything else in the future, it's just going to be Lewis D. Michael. And yeah, I have new clips coming out on YouTube pretty constantly right now, for the warm-up podcast and my stand-up. And then on Instagram is, you know, that's where I post my dates and where I'm going to be and interact with people that want to know where the fuck I'm doing stand-up. So
if you want to catch next week's episode, man, you can be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel at TYE Comedy. Or if you want to see weekly clips, you can check us out on Instagram at Comedians in Bed Podcast. Man, we want to thank my man Lewis for coming on here today.
Oh, thank you.
We know that Ohio State is the better team. We'll show that next year, not even to the team up north, but to the Dookie Green team. We'll show that to
it's all whatever, baby. Appreciate you having me on. Dude, you really are a great host. That plug, your ending, fucking, you got that down, dude. You really, that's professional. Look at you. That's great. You did great.
Hey, man. We'll see you guys next week.
See you.